Good evening, Madonna. Good evening. We're glad to have you back with us.
Thank you.
We wondered perhaps, since this is the Christmas season, whether you might talk a little bit about the work and the purpose, the function of the Christ in the world today.
Is this an agreeable topic? I think I would like to broaden it a bit, if I might, and try to explain something that I think we are prone to miss when we are on the path, which is this. Because you cannot see the help that is offered from the other regions, so-called, then you have a great deal of trouble believing that such help is there. And if you are fortunate enough to believe it is there, then oftentimes you are not fortunate enough to believe that you are worthy of receiving it. When you have this kind of difficulty at work in your life, it is extremely difficult to find a way to convince you that such help is available and that such help is absolutely unconditional. There is nothing that you can do or say or become or think that is going to make you any more capable of receiving that help than anything else. Those of you who are addicted to virtue, then you feel that virtue is the only way. And I say to you, that is nonsense. And if you were paying close attention to the people in the world who have had grand, expanding, uplifting spiritual experiences, is it really always the ones who sit in the front row in the church and are filled with virtue? Or is it perhaps the renegade on his way to throw out the Christians whose name happens to be Saul? Understand this, please. I'm not asking all of you to become some type of terrible thing. I'm simply saying I would like to break through, if I could, once and for all, your grand illusion, which is that somehow you have a way to earn help. Thank God it is not so. Play the game if you will, but it won't work. There's no way that you can earn that kind of right because it is given to you absolutely and can never be taken away. There is nothing you can do to earn it because you already have it. You can't earn something you already possess. This is a speech that makes no sense to the thinking mind. And yet over and over I see people who have had a chance to glimpse the other world, if we may use these words that I don't approve of, but will use. If you've had such a glimpse or you've had such an experience and you feel so overwhelmed, and one of the hallmarks of a bona fide spiritual experience is absolute awe. And when you have such awe, it is very difficult to feel within your being that you measure up. Do you understand? There comes after the fact, not at the moment, but after the fact comes the, oh my God, how can I measure up to this? And then you say, okay, now, this happened once, what can I do so it will happen again? And then you work and you try and you struggle and you look at the past, you say, what did I do? And you sift through all these things. Oh, well, I don't eat meat. Oh, well, that's something I'll do. And I don't swear. Well, that's something I won't do. And I don't commit adultery. I won't. And you go through all these things and you say, now. And you sit around or stand around or pray or whatever, hoping that the same thing will happen to you again. All right. Number one. When it comes, it usually comes as a side effect. Do you understand me? If you are pushing for freedom, if you are amassing your power, as we've discussed, doing your utmost to be centered in your being, you will not be worried about that because you will be paying attention to the moment. And in the moment, there is such a thing that tastes like the divine. And you will stay with that. And you will not venture in your mind into the future and hope and go into the past and wish to reconstruct. You will simply stay where you are and feel what you are here. Now, some people would like to say that there is no such thing as the divine Christ. There's no such thing as the divine Buddha. That all of these are just figments of man's mind and so on. All right, I have no quarrel with that. If that pleases you, if that gives you comfort, then keep it. But I would like to say that your feeling about it does not make it a reality. Because the truth is that that power is real. And at a time when you celebrate the coming to the earth of the creature, is a time to remember this. Because, my friend, the help is there. And if you only knew this in a greater, more intimate and immediate sense, you would not feel so lonely. There are two things that I feel most of you feel when you sit before me in private session. One is you feel lonely, and two, you feel lost. You cannot find your way, and you feel alone. And these are two of the most illusory things that you could possibly say about yourself. And yet they seem so obvious, because as I say again and again, you're using the wrong equipment to view your world. You're using your eyes. And I grant you, when you look through your eyes, it is difficult to understand what I'm saying. So I have said again and again, why am I an addict on meditation? I am, you know, and none of you have sat before me, with very rare exceptions, that I have not said, meditate. And why is that? Because it in itself is so holy and wonderful? No. Because it may be the only time in your entire day that you will take your inner world as seriously as you take your outer world for the rest of your day. It is only through that intense seriousness that you will ever find out what I'm talking about. Because it is the truth that those of you who have followed a path for lifetimes as manifested by various grand and totally incredible avatars, such as the Christ, such as the Buddha, when you are in your inner world, in some cases, they do appear. And you say to me, oh, well, that's not very Zen, so I'm not interested. And I said, oh, really? Oh, really? Do you not think that even a Zen devotee sitting in the most austere monastery rejoices when the Buddha appears? Of course, because you find that it is real, and what you were trying to find out is that it is real. All of you hope it is true. And I say to you, yes, it's true. And the need is for you to know that it's true. They came. They had a dual purpose. Yes, without doubt, they had a destiny on the earth plane. Yes, I agree with you. But the destiny on the earth plane was so small in comparison to their real destiny that it pales in comparison. Because those who think that the Christ is dead are themselves dead. And he lives. This is the truth. So, at a time of a gratitude, of a giving of one's thoughts to those great ones, I think it extremely appropriate that you not forget this part of your quest. Because you can become so austere and so self-stern. Do you know what I'm saying? You can become so much like this that you're just not going to let anything appear to you because it isn't the totality. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you push too hard in a way that you are determined, then you might just miss something, which is a spontaneous happening that can come in your inner world at any time. Now, it is true, and I will state clearly and frankly, I do not recommend that you spend most of your time seeking this kind of thing. Why? Because by and large, they come as a byproduct of your inner search. And if you do not limit the inner experience, then it can spontaneously take on its own hue and color and have meaning for you. Do you understand? If you decide, yes, yes, I am going to sit here and until I die, I'm going to keep waiting for the Christ to appear in my mind, well, maybe he will and maybe he won't. You cannot will these things, you see. You cannot decide and then will them. But what you can do is stay within your being with such awareness and attention and rigor that when something does appear, you will be home and see it. And this is the problem, my friends. Again and again I say, the more you structure how you want God to work in your life, the less chance you have of having anything happen at all, because you will only accept one way. This, my friends, is the limitation of organized religion, with all due respect to those of you who belong to them. The one terrifying aspect of organized religion is that you will not allow yourself to move out of the confines. You have decided how it will happen. You have decided who will come and help you. You've decided it all. Well, then what's God got to do with it? I mean, you've already made up your mind. The only problem is making up your mind does not make it happen. You can fool yourself. You can have dreams. Your dreams can fool you. All of these things can happen. So then what is really left? What is left is one, I think, very clear and obvious thing. I consider it a sign of a mature seeker who is able to look at all of the great avatars with equal gratitude, with equal understanding, and with equal prayer in their heart. Because you see, my friends, you never know what is closest to you. So you take in this lifetime a Christian upbringing. Some of you have tried Christianity this time, and you may be surprised that some of you it's very new to you. Some of you are trying Buddhism for this time, and it's very new to you. Don't limit God. Simple statement, please. If you can get where you are in your being so carefully and so closely and so quietly and so intimately, then the power does its own will and not yours. And then everything meshes and you have understanding. But the fact is that there is help. There is help. Those of you who feel lonely, if I might say so, the reason you feel lonely is because you're sitting in your mind or you're sitting in your emotional body. And from those two points, you are not able to feel what it is that you seek with all desperation. You're looking with the wrong tools. If you look with your mind and with your emotions, you're going to miss. You're going to miss. Because the mind is ever-changing and the emotions are ever-changing. Do you doubt it? Look at your own emotions, constantly changing. Look at your mind, constantly moving. That is not where the focus of quietude is. And you will miss. Because it's not there. So, again comes the addiction. The Bartholomew addiction. Meditate. Boring. It makes your legs hurt and you don't want to do it and you want your coffee and you want a cigarette and this is a big drag. Do it. Because sometime when you finally have made up your mind that you're going to do it no matter what, then you quit fighting with yourself and you simply sit. And in that simply sitting, without any preconceived ideas or thoughts or rituals or whatever, out it comes. And it begins to happen. And the joy of being quietly with yourself for just a small part of the day begins to take on a completely different understanding for you. And it is in that moment that I see the greatest hope for you to begin to move behind what you call the veil. And it's interesting. You think the veil is out there, and I think the veil is in here. Just a matter of where you want to put it. I see it in you. Because that's where you can tear it apart. You can't tear it. If the veil is out there somewhere, how are you going to get there and tear this veil, you know? All these words, you're going to rend the veil and see this and that and the other, and it's always somewhere out there. Oh, no. That's not where the veil is. The veil is in here. And when you start moving within yourself, that veil pulls on its own accord with no extra little thing on your part. It begins to dissolve, and then you begin to. But again, my friends, until you have decided that you will not fight with yourself, that you will simply sit there and allow, then things cannot begin to happen. And things will not begin to change. And you will not begin to taste what it is, which I would call the grace of the gods. I would let you choose your own name. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is the time to say, I'm grateful. Does that mean you cannot be a Christian? Of course not. Be a Christian, by all means, but be a real one. By that I mean, be a Christian that knows that there is such a power that is called the Christos that moves with absolute dynamic energy and whose source is available to you at any moment of your life. And when you believe that, then you qualify, in my mind, as a Christian. Which means that you wait every moment to taste of that power, to taste of that knowledge, to taste of that grace. That's all it means. To me, that's all it means. Are there any questions?
Well, I thought, I mean, something's been on my mind for several days now that pertains to the subject, which is, I've noticed that I can't find any causal connection between the events that are going on around me and those times when I do feel tranquility and power and joy. Almost never is it during meditation.
True.
You know, I just sneezed, or I just had lunch, or I went to the post office, and all of a sudden something happens, and there doesn't seem to be anything that I can connect it with.
True. But you see, that's the secret. That is the secret. If you really knew with all of your being that there was no connection between what you do and what happens from the world of the spirit, then you would quit doing. But you don't believe it. You believe that as you do, so you will receive. You hear it all the time, don't you? Isn't it part of your ritual? As you do, so will you receive. Isn't this true? No, this is not true. But you believe it so deeply that you cannot let go of trying. And it is the trying that is separating. It is the doingness of things that separates you. Nothing else. And doing is of the mind. Doing is in the mind. This is what does. This does first and then the body. Do you understand that? If you're watching very carefully, you will see the mind first and then the body follows. Many people say, oh, no, I don't believe you. Why? Because how do I know? Well, for example, I feel that my body has sexual urges and my mind has none. Uh-huh. Watch. Which comes first? The thought or the physical response? Which comes first in anger? The thought or the response within the physical being? Watch. And you will find, and if I am wrong, please correct me, but I think that you will find that the mind goes first and the physical vehicle follows afterwards. And that is a great grace. Because if it were true that your body on its own, organically carousing through your life, could control all of your responses, you would have a very hard time getting through.
What you're saying is that there are three things, the mind, the body, and the spirit. You put them in your order, the body, the mind, and the spirit, but put one behind the other there. You're saying that the mind has the feeling or the anger response first, and then the body acts it out.
Yes.
What I'm perceiving then is that it's actually the spirit behind this that has everything going to begin with. The mind isn't doing anything, and the body isn't doing anything. The mind, the body, and the spirit are one, as it's taught in, I think, Buddhism. Is it true then that they're working as a unison, that the spirit is working along with this also?
Yes and no. Do you remember last week we spoke about the sea and the log upon the sea? All right. Your mental thoughts are not divinely inspired. They really are not. And this, of course, unfortunately, is the place where we get into difficulty, because then we say, well, if all is one, then everything I think must be God thinking. Well, yes and no. In the sense that you are a part of the source, yes, that part is true. But to say that every thought that you have is extending and creative, which is my definition of a divine thought, is not true. For example, when you begin to pay close attention to what is happening in your mind, you will see anything that rises and falls, is by my definition not of the divine essence. It contains in it at every moment the chance for divine understanding. Oh yes, the seed is always there. You understand? You perceive someone, you have a variety of opportunities. But in that moment, how do you choose? If you choose nothing at all and allow the moment to carry its own, then the chances are very good that something divine, extending, and uplifting is going to happen. But if you participate in the game, you, now I'm speaking of a limited mind that goes around in these cycles based on memory, past action, and so on. If you are going to play with that mechanism, then I do not think you are going to get very close to divine wisdom.
The first example that you gave is what I have in mind as far.
It is always there. There is never an instant. There is never a moment. There is never anything in your life that doesn't have it in it. But the problem is, my friends, that you aren't paying attention to that. You are paying attention to, if we might go back, to the trying. You are always trying. And what are you trying to do? Most of the time, if you're being honest, you're trying to impress other people. You're trying to get control of other people. You are trying to manipulate their lives and your life. You are trying. It is a rare time that you're trying to let go, and accept. Watch your own life and find out. If I'm speaking wrong, tell me about it. But most people spend all of their time either trying or on remote control, which means they're not paying attention at all. They're so bored, and they're so disgusted, and they're so fed up, if I might use those words, with their own life that they simply are going through the ritual of living, and there's nothing happening. There's no dynamic energy. I would prefer, and I know that I will not get your approval for this, I would prefer some anger and hate going on in your life than to see you somnambulistically living your lives. I would prefer. Because if you are involved in your own life to the extent that you feel anger and hate and resentment, then there is a chance that you're going to start to feel something else. But the greatest problem is that so many people aren't feeling anything. They aren't feeling anything. They simply go through it. Then some terrible thing comes in their life. Yes, now they feel. But most of the time, when things are going well, where are you? What are you feeling? What is happening? You are asleep. Literally sleeping through your entire life. This is one problem with virtue. I'm going to be dubbed the anti-virtuous. I can hear it now. But that is not really what I'm trying to say. I'm just trying to shake some of these infestations that I feel so predominantly, because it is so easy to feel good about being virtuous. And that is a great mistake, my friends, because virtue can keep you asleep for lifetimes. Anger, jealousy, hatred. Okay, now you are feeling something. Now you are in touch with what is happening in your life. And when it starts to pinch, then you are going to make a change. And if you never get pinched, you're going to stay asleep. So your lives are rigged for you, my friends, by your own choices. So that you will have some pinches, so that difficulties will arise, so that challenges will be there, and you will have to say, the only way out is freedom. And then somebody says, well, what does that mean? And you say, it means I've got to do nothing. But you've got to consciously. Do you understand? It's so stupid, and this tape is going to sound foolish, but it is true. You have to consciously do nothing, and that's a quite different thing than just being unconscious. Because when you're unconsciously doing nothing, my friends, you think you are doing a great deal. Do you know that? You really think you're doing a great deal. Ask yourself. You see yourself as overcoming one obstacle, and then another arises, and oh, I'm overcoming this obstacle, and look. And you look at your lives, and you see that this is the drama that you see. All these difficulties, and you have amassed your power, and now you're going to overcome this one, and then you have a little bit of peace, and then another one comes, and now you're living again, and you amass your energies. Oh, my. If you're watching, you will see it goes on and on and on. Life is not dependable, is it? Things happen to you that you don't like, that you don't want, that you didn't ask for in your own mind, and they happen. And that is the pattern of human life. And it is not a mistake that it is that way. I think you are all very smart to program it that way. The problem comes when you say, oh, but if I get over this one terror, if I can only meet this one disaster, if I can only this time, then everything after that will be smooth and I will feel all right. Nonsense. There's always something. Even when there's nothing, you'll make it up. You know that? Even when there's nothing going on, you realize what you do. And this machine over here is a great help to you. Your life, there's nothing wrong in your life, so you turn on the box and now you have something to get into. All right, there's all of this business. Oh my goodness, look what's happening here. And now, of course, all of America is very involved. The Iranian situation. You are all participating in a drama. And if you were being very honest, it's a lot more interesting than being bored. I'm not advocating hostages. I'm saying wake up to what you are doing to yourselves in order to make your life more interesting so you don't have to look at yourself. Because that is exactly the problem. This box is the greatest thing to keep you from looking at yourself. You can spend all of your time worrying about that. And really, my friends, in the ultimate sense, what good does it do? And what good does it do them? In the ultimate sense, would it not be better for you to say, all right, I ache, I weep, I feel sorrow, but so be it. I've got a job to do right here. I am myself a hostage to an illusion right here in my own life. And if the opportunity arises to help, then help. No, that's not my problem. Help. But then drop it. Do the helping and then do the dropping. And then get back to the business at hand, which is, where is your fear? That is the duty. That is the job. But it's so easy. Do you understand? So easy to get your emotions involved. A very excellent poem, if I might say, that you wrote, and I do salute you. But it's the same idea, is it not? At the end, you must realize that this gentleman, Mr. Khomeini, is the same as you. Do you not think he feels the same righteous indignation that you do? Oh, do you think he feels evil and ugly and terrible? Do you? Well, if you do, you are very mistaken. Do you think those people feel that they are wrong? No, my friends, they feel they are right. And you feel that you are right. Do you understand? And in the ultimate sense, you are both wrong because you both have taken an illusion to be a reality. And you're missing the moment. If those hostages are using their time at maximum, there is a chance for freedom. And if you wish to make a prayer for them, then let it be that. That they use at maximum what has been handed to them in their destiny, and may they use it for freedom. Because it happens again and again in moments of extremity all through the world's history. In moments of extremity, why do you think there are so many wise Jews? Why? That is a very basic question. Why? Because they have had a great deal of difficulty. They have been imprisoned and incarcerated over and over and over again. And solitude was the only way. What did they have left? Only who they were. Only who they were. And there you have a chance for freedom and knowledge. Who was the real prisoner? The poor man standing outside those gates was the real prisoner, not the ones within, if it was used at maximum. I'm not in favor of prison. I have to keep saying this because you cannot imagine how misquoted things get. But I'm trying to point out that it is the dilemma is yours still. Your dilemma is no different from theirs. Perhaps they are even in a better position in some very strange way. Because extremities push you. They must push you. And you either go down in self-pity and try to have others help you, or you stand within your being and say, I will watch this process, and I will understand. What point to suffer if you suffer for nothing, my friends? That is the biggest waste in the world, to suffer for nothing. Suffer you must, then suffer to be free of suffering, now and forever. That is the use of suffering. No event that comes into your life, no event cannot be turned for your freedom. No event. But it's so easy to go outer and look for self-pity, look for other people to help you. Do you understand? You get involved in the game of poor me. You get involved in the game of how terrible. You get involved in all these games and you miss it. And you miss it. And then things do become plastic. But then again, we have another one comes upon us. And oh, now we have another chance. But oh no, I think I will use this extremity in order to get sympathy from so-and-so, or to do this, or to do whatever. It doesn't matter. The face changes. The dynamic is the same. We use our extremities not for freedom, but to gain some kind of pity from the world, some kind of manipulation of others. And when you do that, you've lost it. You've lost the real meaning of what could come from that.
During this last week, I read in one of your the transcripts that the doctor has done here that one of the purposes of meditation is to raise your vibration.
Sure.
Can you enlighten me a little on how to raise vibrations, what we're talking about?
All right. They go hand in hand with the topic that we're discussing tonight. You are very naive in some ways, my friend, because you cannot see what is really happening around you. You get these feelings of isolation and loneliness, and nothing is real except what your eyes can perceive. But if your eyes could perceive clearly, and those of you who have had drugs will understand exactly what I'm saying now, you will see at certain high times and experiences, either spiritual or drug-induced, you will see the vibrational frequency that permeates everything in the universe, or at least as far as your perception carries you. Now, if you are also very good at hearing, you will hear, because there is a sound to moving vibration. And if you are also good at seeing, you will see the lights that permeate and undulate through all of this. That is what is here. That is what is here. That is not what you perceive, but that is what is here. These are called vibrations. All right. When you sit in meditation, for the first time for the day, you are saying to yourself, I am going to close off a certain set of receiving stations, which is all the visual and the hearing, so on, all of these things. I'm going to turn all of these off in whatever way is most advantageous for you. And I'm going to use a totally different part of my mechanism to try and see if anything's here. Do you realize that's what you do when you meditate? You're just trying to find out if anything is there other than what you're used to. If you're really paying attention, that's what you're trying to do, is to find out, is there something else other than all of this normalcy? Is there something else? And those of you who meditate deeply find out, oh yes, there is. Aha. All right. The problem comes when you try, you begin to feel these things, then what does the mind do? Then the mind grasps a hold of them, and you start to make false pictures. This is why over and over again I say, please go back within yourself and just simply allow. Do not make mentalizations. Do not put fantasies in your mind. Just allow the play to play itself out in any way that's meaningful. But as you sit there, when the vibration, you see, it is an illusion to say, and a lie, which I've spoken to you, that you can increase vibration. What you do is increase your awareness of vibration. You understand? The vibration is there. But it is also true in a very subtle way that the more you pay attention to something, the stronger it becomes. The stronger it becomes. If you have a hate thought and you just have it for a little while, then not much is done. It comes and it goes. But let us take the opposite. Let us take a hate thought and start to think about it more and more. Bring more energy to it. Build it. What happens? It is a rage. It becomes a fire. And soon it permeates your whole thought, your whole mind. And you are fear, you are anger, you are hate, whatever it is, you are that. Because that's all that your mind is on. So the opposite also works for you, which is when you decide to put aside all the rest of it for this specified time, and go within to get yourself very quiet, and just to find out what's there, the more you pay attention to it, the stronger it becomes in your awareness. You understand? It's there. But the more you pay attention to it, the more of it becomes manifest for you. It's a very simple mechanism. There's nothing mysterious because vibrations are constantly around you. But it is also true that that which you place your attention on is that which becomes more powerful. It is a grand illusion to think that you have no power. And those of you who think that you are powerless are fooling yourselves very efficiently. Look at what you do. Look at what you create with your mind every day. It is an interesting example to watch your mind going on and on with its rounds. What are you dwelling on? And what are you making greater? And what are you making less? Now, those who are in favor of virtue have a point, because they say, if you keep your mind on virtue, then you're probably going to somehow become more virtuous. The problem is, how are you going to define virtue? Virtue usually is that which makes you feel good in the long term. You don't like to just take care of the momentary things, but in the long haul, it's all written down in your great tomes, this is virtuous and this is not virtuous, you see. And when you get things so beautifully organized, then you lose it. Because virtue is something that comes upon you in an instant. It has no past, it has no future. It is simply a rightness in the moment. That is all that virtue ever can be. And in the next moment, that same virtue may be non-virtue. There are no rules, my friend. I know this dismays many of you, but there are no rules. And this is why, and this is the second lesson of the Christos, thou should not judge. Because you see, my friends, if you know what virtue is, and you look around your world and you see people doing those things which you consider non-virtuous, you are making a judgment. And in that making of the judgment, I would ask you to reflect very carefully, by what right do you decide that? By what right do you decide? If you want a definition of virtue from me, there is only one thing I consider virtuous. And that is, that which you are doing, which will give you freedom. And I don't care what. And I mean that absolutely. I don't care what it is. If it gives you freedom, to me, it is the ultimate of virtue. And I have no other definition.
Pardon me, this is going back to what you were talking about earlier. And it has to do with questions relates to comfort. And I find it to be a difficult concept to relate to, because it's comfort now is not what comfort was a few years ago, and it may not be in the future. And with comfort comes up a lot of justifications, I find. They're very subtle, and they appeal greatly to the ego, etc. And what I'd like to really know is a good way to term what may be comfort and what may help us stay just a little bit more awake. Because there's a chance of going overboard, of, you know, of...
comfortable, isn't it? To have given up everything is very comfortable. No, you're absolutely right. Again, I say, if I were to look at everyone in this room and to say, what is the ultimate maximum for each of them in this statement, it would be different. And this is why we can only go back to one thing, which is you, which is your own individual unfoldment and your own hopefully intuitive tapping onto you. You can tell, my friends, when you are being comfortable for the wrong reason. When you just enjoy comfort for its own sake, and, you know, that wonderful safe feeling, whatever it might be, you can tell. And you, if you're paying attention, you can tell. There are many kinds of comfort. And one of the main comforts is other people. This is one of the main comforts in your world. And one of the illusions that arises from such a perception is that if you do not have other people in your world, you are going to be miserable. This is a basic statement that most humans make. Human beings feel that other human beings are the thing that makes them feel good. And my understanding of that is that this is a temporary thing. And sometimes the comfort of a relationship can put you to sleep so perfectly that you'll wake up and find out you're dead. And you have lost it. A relationship that is used to help each other move into freedom is never a comfort, because the other will be constantly there as that part of you that can reflect your journey for you. And that is not a comfort. And it will probably not even be comfortable. Do you understand? Relationships that are very comfortable often are very somnambulistic. It's simply because you refuse to face. You just go to sleep and take the comfort of having someone around in your living room to talk with. I want to address this seriously because I feel it's a very important question. Humans use everything. And the question that has to be seen is why, what are you using it for? And relationship is where the greatest abuse comes in. People use each other to keep each other asleep. The one thing that a relationship does not want is change. Test it out. People don't want their loved ones to change. They don't want them to want new experiences that don't include them. They don't want them to move out of the orb that they have so stably restricted in their minds. You know, when they start to move out, fear takes over. And you say, oh, but if you do that, then you don't love me. What you're really saying is, if you do that, you're going to get comfort from some other place. And I want you to get all the comfort from me. What an incredibly selfish perception. And you say it because you don't want to lose what you think you have. But the truth of the matter is that if you were really in relationship with others, you would say to them, whatever it is that is needful to your unfoldment, I want it for you, and to mean it. That kind of a relationship has very little comfort in it. Do you understand? Because each moment is dynamically capable of total change. Do you see? That is not a comfortable relationship. You want people to say, I will love you until I die. Oh my. What does this mean? I do not understand that kind of statement. If you say, I will be in a loving vibrational frequency for the rest of my life, I say, I doubt it. I doubt it. But people use relationships. I think it's one of the most misused in the human realm. And you constrict. And then you do the other wonderful thing, is which you constrict your children. And then you constrict your parents. And you constrict your and it goes on. You know, it's always there. And the basic fear is, don't change anything. Oh, please don't change anything. And what you're trying to say is, I am afraid that if you leave me, I will be alone. And if I am alone, I will die. Or else I will be so dead within myself that I might as well die. The grand illusion is that someone else needs to be in your life for you to feel love. And that is a lie. You can feel love anywhere at any time, and no one needs to be there. You hold each other in bondage, all of you. You say, if there's no one there, then I can't love. And the funny thing about that is it's almost the opposite. Almost the opposite. That those moments of real exaltation oftentimes happen when there's no one there at all. No one's there. It explodes, it erupts, you are in love, you are in that state of love and you know it. But then you go through the bag, oh my God, I've got to have a reason for this. And you try and find it, and oh, it's the sunset, oh no, that can't be it, I've seen too many of those. Well, it must be, you know, you have to find something, do you understand, to hook it onto. You cannot say, love is here. Thank God, love is here. You have to stick it on something. It may not be the sunset, my friend. It may not be the sunset at all. It may be you, in a moment of repose, of quietude, hooking up with that which is always there. So comfort can only be harmful when it is that kind of cloying comfort that keeps you held up. that keeps you in sin. If you have to have a certain kind of a home, if you have to have a certain income or a certain car or whatever it might be, I think you should look at that. Because you're using something to keep you protected. It's the bulwark that keeps you separated from the rawness that you fear. My friend, the rawness is what frees you. When it becomes so raw that you can't stand it anymore, then you look the only place you have, which is within you. I'm not in favor of austerities for austerity's sake at all. One of the greatest traps that the Western world has fallen into, with all due respect to the great Hindu tradition that you follow, one of the greatest mistakes that you are doing is thinking that somehow by restricting austerities on the outside that they're going to transfer within you. And my friends, that is nonsense. It goes the other way around. Anything that is imposed from without, you will eventually have to go and experience. Try it. Give up drinking for 10 years if you like to drink. Give it up. Not because you feel you want to, but because some big daddy said you should not drink. And you watch yourself. And 10 years later, you think you're through with it? They remove the austerity from you, and what are you going to do? If the root is still within you, you will drink, you will take dope, you will have sexual relationships, you will do whatever it is. Because that's not where you finish up things. And comforts are a great health factor. And the added problem is that others are wanting the same comfort. So you see, you compound yourselves. You say, you give to me this comfort, and I will give this comfort to you, and we will call this love, and won't we be happy ever after? You see, be very aware of this. I'm not asking you all to go home and divorce your husbands and your wives and throw out your... that's not the point. The point is, what are you using your relationships for? Those of you that have children, what are you using them for? Children are misused a great deal. It's so much easier to worry about the children than to worry about your own freedom. And each time you worry, you add, and you add, and you add, an added burden. Burdens upon burdens. Rather than freedom. Allowing. Joyful celebration of a life that's shared. But no, we have to control. Well, I've gone on too long about that, but I just want to make this very clear. Comfort is something to watch, but the opposite, which is throwing it all away, is equally the middle way. But what does that mean? Those are words, the middle way. What? The middle way for you is going to be different than the middle way for her. But you will know within your being, if you're watching, those things which are comforting to you in order to keep you from looking. And those comforts that you can laugh at, but keep around you. Do you understand? You can keep comforts around you and laugh at them. You don't have to give up your Cadillac. I don't suppose any of you have one, but if you did, maybe you do. Anyway, you don't have to give up your Cadillac. I don't care about that. But you can laugh at yourself as you catch your Cadillac. Don't have to throw these things into the trash can, but watch. And have a little humor about yourself. Those of you who really are into certain things, don't throw them over and become very dreary and boring, but participate in it. See this. Laugh a little. It's very funny. If you can only laugh a little. You know, and once you start laughing, the space is reached. You understand? Once you start really laughing, you've created a space between you and that. And somebody can smash into it the next day and you won't cry and die. Mourn it and bury it. You will just laugh a little. Do you understand? I'm not asking any of you to give up anything. That would be a great mistake on my part. But I am asking you to stay absolutely within your being and watch what it is you're doing. And some of those things, like water, will fall off of you without your doing anything. Because there is a wonderful capability in the human, which you call humor, which is the ability to see with laughter the foolishness of some of your games, the pathos of some of your games. It is there. And you can laugh. And when you start to laugh at yourself, my friends, you're really on your way, truly. I'm a very distrustful of the very sober, righteous, religious person. I'm a little worried. when I see that. Because this is a person who would have a great deal of trouble laughing at yourself. And until you begin to laugh at your own foolishness, you're not going to turn it away. You simply aren't. You're too addicted to it. Even in the reverse sense of hating it. You're just as addicted if you hate it as if you love it. Understand this. It's still a part of you. The only time it's no longer a part is when there's absolute laughter and understanding. When understanding moves into your mind, addiction goes. No one who really understands an addiction keeps it. Because in the understanding of it comes the total oneness with it. The exploring of it totally. And when you've experienced something totally, you can let it go. It's the partial experience of life that so saddens you, that makes you yearn. And so we're back to where we began, which is the season of the Christ. What you're yearning for is to know, with a knowing that words do not need to be used in, that you are ever one, that you can never be abandoned, that you can never be hurt, that you can never lose anything, that you don't need anything, and primarily, that you are ever and constantly loved. You are all looking for love, but you look in a limited place. There is no need to want love, my friends, because you are love. You do not need something that you are. But if you keep looking in the wrong place, you will see a limited face, and you will be afraid. As long as you say, love is outside me, or I need something outside me in order to feel love, you will feel fear. Because people leave you, don't they? They die, or they find someone else, they get disinterested, they go, and you are left. So what? So what? The thing that you love about others is the feeling within you of loving them. That is what you love. That feeling within you that you are loving someone. That is what you love. And you don't need anybody to feel that. And you certainly don't need one person. In millions and billions of people, there's only one person in this entire world that can make you feel like that. That I consider to be maximum limitation. Maximum. And if this one person leaves your life, you can never love again. You can never have this feeling again. Nonsense. And all of your ballads and your poetry and all this, nonsense. It is not true. It is a great illusion to keep you separate from feeling that spontaneous moment. Look at all the great stories about the people sitting on the cliff and they look at the moon and they just explode. The tears are running down their face. Why? Because they're in love with the moon? I mean, what are we talking about? We're simply saying it is a feeling. And then others try to say, oh, it must be him or her or that or this or whatever. Or else it's because I didn't eat meat, I ate eggplant tonight. It's the way you do it, my friend. Laugh, but it's true. Something happens and you have to find a donkey to pin the tail on. You do. You cannot disallow it. And if that donkey decides it doesn't want to live with you anymore, then you cannot pin the tail on it anymore. And you are finished. You're finished. No more love, no more joy can ever enter your life again, ever. My friends, I don't want any part of that kind of love. Because it isn't real. And understand this. Closer than hands and feet, closer than your breath, closer than anything you can conceive of, the love is strong, true, unfailing, totally uplifting, totally compassionate, ever-present, and you don't have to go anywhere for it. And you don't have to do anything to get it. You simply have to shut up and pay attention. That's all you have to do. You have to shut up your mind. You have to shut up your emotions just for a little while. And it is there. It is there. And the more it is there, the more you believe it's there, the more you will seek the source, and the more it will live your life for you. And it is the truth. I don't care what extremity you're in. It is there. And that really was what the Christmas is all about, you know. When it's all said and done, that's what he said. And that's what he meant. And it hasn't changed a bit. I wish you all a blessed, creative, extending, and uplifting.